So Parshas Toldos, page 124. Okay, I want to do something a little bit different today, but not different, just that I... After we learn a little bit in the Pesukim, there's a theme which I was learning at the moment, just that seems to run through last week's Parsha, this week's Parsha. Quite a... bit of a deep, esoteric sort of theme. I hope I'll be able to give it over properly. But we'll try. So, take the journey together. But in the meantime, let's learn a little bit of the Pesukim, and then we'll come back to it and sort of analyze a few things and try and go through the concept. Okay, so it's Parshas Toldos. It's the Parsha of Yitzchak. It's the Parsha of Yitzchak Avinu. Right? Last week's Parsha and the week before, we still have Avram and Sarah. Yitzchak was born 2 weeks ago, last week he got married. And this week is really all about the life of Yitzchak and focuses mainly on Yitzchak, and then next week we're going to Yaakov for a few parshas. So this is the parsha of Yitzchak. And indeed the parsha begins with the toldos Yitzchak. These are the children, these are the generations of Yitzchak. So the parsha says, Ve'ela toldos Yitzchak ben Avram. These are the children of Yitzchak, the son of Avram. Avram hoylidus Yitzchak. Avram gave birth to Yitzchak. Vayehi Yitzchak ben arboim shana, and Yitzchak was 40 years. Bekachtoi es Rivka, when he married Yivka, Rivka bas Besuel, the daughter of Besuel, ho arami mi padan Aram, from padan Aram. Achois Lavan, the sister of Lavan, ho arami loyla isha, took her for a wife. Right. And the pasuk says. And Yitzchak davened to Hashem opposite his wife. As the Mefarshim bring that they each stood in one corner and they davened strongly. Ki akorohi, because she was barren, she couldn't have children. Vayoser loy Hashem, and Hashem answered him. Vatahar Rivka ishtoi, and Rivka his wife became pregnant. Interesting, it says Vayoser loy Hashem answered him. They both davened, but Hashem answered him. The Mefarshim bring down, Rashi brings down as well, that it was in the schus, in the merit of Rivka, but at the end, his tefillah, the tefillah of Yitzchak, was somewhat more powerful because he had also the schus of his forefathers. In other words, they were both tzaddikim, but she was a tzaddikas bas rasha, she was a tzaddikas, the daughter of a wicked person. He was a tzaddik, the son of a tzaddik, and therefore that carried more weight than the tefillah. Right? Doesn't make a person greater necessarily, it just carries more weight than the tefillah. Right? Famous story, the children struggled within her. She had a very rough pregnancy. And she said, if that's the case, why do I need this all? Why is this to me? Why is this happening to me? And she went to seek God. What does it mean she went to seek God? She went to the yeshiva of Shem and Aver. Right at that time, although the focus was on Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, but there was also still a yeshiva led by the son of Noach, Shem and Aver, right? Who was still alive, because they in generation of Shem, they lived very long. And he was a tzaddik, so Rivka went to the yeshiva of Shem to ask Shem, what is happening? Right, what's going on? Why is this happening to her? Why is she having such a terrible pregnancy? Interestingly enough, it's a very strange passage. First of all, just we know that Rashi tells us that by Yisroitzu Habanim, that the children struggled with, you know, they wanted to go out. We're talking about Yitzchak and Esav, right? The famous idea that when she would walk past a house of pagan worship, a church of Avodah Zarah, Esav would want to run out. When she'd walk past a Beis Medrash, when she walked past a shul, a place of Torah learning, Yaakov would want to come out. And that troubled her. Why did it trouble her that much? Not because she was troubled about one child going off the way, not serving Hashem. The Roshim say she didn't know there was two children. That was a problem. She thought it's one mixed up child. That's even worse. A child that's got a particular... Right? A child that's got a particular focus of what they're doing. Even if it's negative, you can deal with it. You can develop strategy. But a child that you don't know where they're going, that's even more difficult. Right? So that was Yitzchak. That's why Rivka was so distressed. I think I've told this before. There's a famous little anecdote. They say that it says in the Gemara that before a child is born, they teach a child the entire Torah, the Neshama Tovel Torah, right? So obviously Yaakov and Esav also, what are they doing in the womb? They were studying Torah, which then in that case brings a question. We understand why Esav wanted to run out. He wasn't interested in staying in Cheder. So they used to walk past Beis Avodah Zarah. He wanted to run out. But Yaakov, where is he going? He had a fantastic teacher. The Malach was teaching him the whole Torah. Where was he running to? Why did he want to go out? So they say that yes, he had a fantastic teacher, but his chavrusa was no good. Right? His learning partner was no good. That was no good. So he wanted to go to yeshiva to find a good chavrusa. Okay. Anyway, so she goes to seek Hashem. Now, this is another. Just before we go on, there's another interesting little problem with this pasuk. What does it mean? Vatoimer, she said, Lama ze anochi. Why is this happening to me? Always, what I need this for? What type of thing? I mean, surely she's not the first. I mean, people have bad pregnancies. It happens, and it's one of the things that came from the sin of Eitz Hadas. We know that the punishment for Chava after having eaten from the forbidden fruit, that there would be pain in childbirth. That was the whole idea. She was Akara, she was barren. She had been married for 20 years. She didn't have children. Hashem blessed her with the pregnancy. So one would imagine she'd be overjoyed. Okay, so she was very painful. She was in great distress. But what's the question? Why was she going to ask Hashem? What was the issue? I saw an interesting little pshat in this, just worth sharing. From one of the Rabbanim of Brisk, Rabbi Heschel, based in Brisk, he says the following. He said that it's brought down that there are two things that we find with regard to Isha Tzidkoniyos, with regard to righteous women. There's a certain theme in the Torah, we find two things with regard to righteous women. One is that righteous women were not included in the curse of Chava. But although Chava was punished, that she would suffer child pain in childbirth because of the eating of the forbidden fruit, that punishment included all women except for extremely righteous women, except for Tzidkoniyos, right? On the one hand. And therefore we don't find by any other righteous women that a particular story of them having tremendous distress during childbirth. The only other one is Rachel, actually. She died in childbirth, but okay. But the other thing we find with Tzidkoniyos, the other thing we find with righteous women is that with regard to Tzadikim and their wives, sometimes Hashem intentionally withholds children from them. Sorry? Yeah, we have it by Avraham and Sarah, we have it by Yitzchak and Rivka, we have it by Rachel, not so much by Yaakov so much because he had children right away of Leah, but, right? And one of the reasons is because Nis'ave HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'tfilosan Shel Tzadikim, it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu desires the tefillah of a tzaddik, right? The tefillah of a tzaddik, something amazing, something very, very powerful about the tefillah of a tzaddik, and therefore sometimes Hashem, in His wisdom, for reasons that we don't quite understand, He causes a righteous woman to be in the predicament of not having a child in order that she should daven, in order that we find it by tefillah, we find it by Chana, right? That we read it on Rosh Hashanah. We find many, many women throughout history that were barren, and therefore they davened, and after a while, after davening strong, eventually they were able to get through to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, and Hashem answered them. Right? So that's what we find. Rivka had the following problem. She didn't understand what category she fell into. On the one hand, she was in Akara, she was barren, she didn't have children for a long time, and that's why she had to go on Daven, which put her in the category of a tzadekus, the fact that Hashem was waiting for her tefillah. On the other hand, she was having a terribly rough pregnancy. So that's why she asked the question, Lama Zeonochi, why is this happening to me? She couldn't understand. It's one way or other. If she's supposed to be barren for 20 years because she was tzaddikus, so she shouldn't be subject to the pain of childbirth, which was given to Chava as a punishment because righteous women are exempt. If she's not such a tzaddikus and she was subject to that punishment, so why is it so difficult for her now during the time of pregnancy? And that's why she didn't understand. That was the question she went to ask. But again, it's all based on this idea that she didn't understand that she had two children there. She didn't understand that what she was doing, it wasn't a difficult pregnancy. What it was a cosmic struggle. It was a struggle between two nations that she happened to be carrying, right? Okay, so what does Hashem answer? Says the next pasuk, Vayomer Hashem Las Hashem says to Shnei Goyim Bevitnech. There are two nations in your stomach, in your womb. Shnei Lomi Mimaayach Yipreidu. There are two powers that will spread out from your womb. One will be stronger than the other. Rav Yavoy Tzor, and at the end, the elder will serve the younger. Okay, so she understood. Her term, she carried full term. That's what it means, basically. Behold, she had twins. The first one comes out red. Kuloi kadera seyar. Entirely like a hairy sort of coat. Ayikru ishmoy Esav, and I called him Esav to do with the hair that he was covered with. Afterwards, his brother came out. The Yodo Echezes Bakev Esav, his hand was holding on to the heel of Esav. Right? Ayikra Shmoy Yaakov, and he called his name Yaakov. You know, it's an interesting difference. But Esav, it says they called his name Esav. But Yaakov, it says he called his name Esav. Rashi says that he called his name Yaakov means Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu called his name Yaakov. Right? It was a divinely given name. Yitzchak ben Shishim Shanov Zadis Esav. Yitzchak was 60 years when he gave birth. Vayigdulu anarim, and these boys grew up. Vayi Esav ish yedeh atzayit ish sadeh. Esav was a hunter, a man of the field. That was his tendency. Yaakov ishtom, Yaakov was a simple, obviously it doesn't mean simple, it means sincere, more sort of introverted. Yoshev Holim, sitting in the tents. The tents we know to mean the tents of yeshiva, of shame and aver, he learned Torah. Holim, tents in the plural, referring to the written Torah, the oral Torah, the hidden Torah, the revealed Torah, etc., as all the commentaries point out. But yeah, have Yitzchak as Esav kitzayid b'fiv. Yitzchak loved Esav kitzayid b'fiv because he had hunting in his mouth. We'll soon see what that means. Rivka oyheves as Yaakov, and Rivka, on the other hand, loved Yaakov. What does it mean that Esav was tzayid b'fiv? Right. So Rashi brings out. He says he was cunning. He was hunting. He would cheat with his mouth. What does that mean? He tricked his father. How did he trick his father into loving him? So we learn that Esav portrayed himself as a tzaddik. How would he do that? He would portray himself as someone who's particularly meticulous in mitzvahs, who's very careful with the observance of mitzvahs. And he came to ask his father various halachic questions. Right? So you know the famous medrash. The medrash says that he would ask his father, "Ha'eich ma'asrin es hamelach? How do you tithe the salt? Ha'eich ma'asrin es hateven? How do you tithe straw?" Right? What's the simple reading of this medrash? Some reading this medrash is like this. There's a mitzvah when you grow produce in Eretz Yisrael to give ma'aser, to give tenth. To give tenth to the levy, whatever. We know that the Ovos, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov and their families kept the entire Torah even though it wasn't given yet. So presumably they would separate the ma'aser. So Esav showed himself such a frum guy that he was so machmir that he came to Yitzchak and he said, "How do you take ma'aser? How do you tithe salt? How do you tithe straw?" Which was meant to impress Yitzchak, which apparently it did. And it impressed Yitzchak because obviously the answer is you don't tithe salt, because you only tithe things that grow. You don't tithe straw because you only tithe things that you eat and of human consumption, and straw is one of them. And therefore Yitzchak would answer Esav, no, he doesn't need to take the Meiser on it. But in the meantime, he was impressed with his piety and his meticulousness of mitzvahs, right? It actually needs to be understood because actually doesn't make any sense. First of all, this question that Esav asked, how do you take the ma'aser, how do you tithe salt, actually does not represent a pious person, it represents a total ignoramus. An amoritz. That's what it is, right? A person who doesn't know that you don't take ma'aser of salt, any cheder kid who's learned a little bit about trumas and ma'aseres, he's learned a few Mishnayos. No, you don't take Meister on salt. You don't need to be a huge Talmud Chacham for that. Right? It's not something that anyone with a basic halachic knowledge would go and ask a Shaila about. Right? So, it begs the question, how exactly did Esav impress Yitzchak with that? He should have shown him that, I mean, he was 15 years old, he was asking these questions already, right? I mean, where was he till now? Where were you when we learned this in class? Like, right? Number one. Number two, let's analyze the question. What do you mean, ha'eich ma'asrim es hamelach? He didn't ask a shaila if you have to ma'aser the salt. He asked, how do you take ma'aser of salt? Which also is a strange question. What do you mean, how do you take Maaser of salt? You take it, you separate 10%, and you give it. I mean, that's Maaser is. Again, simple mathematic thing. Everyone knows what Maaser is. Maaser is 10%. If you got 100 oranges, you take 10 oranges. If you got 100 boxes of salt, you take 10 boxes of salt. What's the question? What do you mean, ha'eich Maaser mesamamech? So first of all, if he's trying to ask, do you have to? Then it's an ignorant question. If he's asking, how do you? What do you mean, how do you? It's simple, right? But Mepharshim explained a very interesting, fascinating thing. Actually, no. The Maaser that Esav was talking about was not... There's two types of Maaser. There's the 10% you've got to take off produce that grows in the land of Israel. Right? Then there's a general halacha of Maaser. When a person earns money or a person receives assets, you're supposed to give 10% to tzedakah. Right? So a person should give charity, a person should give tzedakah to the value of 10% of what he owns. Yeah. When you do that, the halacha is obviously you don't have to give. The person got, I don't know, inherited a lot of salt or a lot of gold or a lot of whatever it is, right? Obviously, he doesn't have to give 10% of that particular thing. He has to work out the value, right? If a person earned money, but he was paid money, not in money, he was paid money in assets. He was given, I don't know, he was given jewelry, he was given whatever, right? Then that's also an earnings, right? That earnings he would also have to give Maaser, would have to give 10% to tzedakah, but he wouldn't have to give the actual thing. What he would have to do is work out the value of what that earnings is worth and then give 10%, the equivalent of 10% of money to tzedakah. Right? We find this before, by the way, by Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu gave Maaser. We find that when Avraham Avinu came back from the war of Sodom and he met Shem, or the way it's referred to there in the Chumash as Malki Tzedek. Malki Tzedek, the king of Yerushalayim, came to meet him, and that was Shem, we are told. Right, and it says there, Vayitan loy Avraham Maaser Mikoil. Avraham Avinu gave him Maaser out of everything that he had, not only the stuff that grew, because that was a general. Avraham Avinu had just earned a lot of money from the booty of Sodom, a lot of different spoil and assets, etc. So he gave him Maaser because he was a frum Jew, so he wanted to give him Maaser, and he fulfilled that mitzvah to give him Maaser. Okay. Comes along Esav with a lomdisha question. He comes with a clever question. This is taka clever question. Comes and he says like this: I have salt, I have straw. I want to give tzedakah. I know you don't have to take Maaser of grown produce. That's not my shaila. I want to give tzedakah out of the salt, out of this Maaser. How do you do that? In other words, how do you work out the value of salt? What does that mean? Because there are certain things that have double values. It's just a simple halachic analysis of this thing, but it's very fascinating. There's certain things that have two levels of value. They have a value how they are on their own, and then have the value how they are when you mix them with something else, right? Salt or straw on their own is worth very little, right? But if you put salt into a very, very expensive dish, a restaurant owner makes an incredibly expensive dish which needs salt, right? And then he gives you that dish, it's a kilo or whatever it is. And that dish costs $100, but part of that dish is salt. Right? The salt in that dish takes on another value because it now is part of a very, very expensive dish. Right? Same thing with straw. If you use straw just for consumption, it's worth nothing. If you gather straw together and put it and sell it to farmers for animal fodder, it has a different value. It's not the same value. So comes Esau with a real deep halachic question. He says, I want to be very particular in the mitzvah of giving tzedakah of Maaser. Ha'eich Maaser nesamelach. How do you Maaser the salt? How do you work out the value? Is it the value how salt is on its own, in which case I owe very little in my tzedakah bill? Or do I have to work out the value, how the value of salt would be as integrated into something else, in which case it's worth much more? Now that's really a clever question, right? So that's the pshat, that's the question, and it fits very well into the words, not do you have to take Maaser, how do you take Maaser? How do you take Maaser means how do you work out the value? And with that, he was able to impress Yitzchak, and Yitzchak sort of took him for a person who was very particular in mitzvahs. Which obviously doesn't answer the question completely, because one would imagine that Yitzchak, being such a tzaddik, would be able to see through Esav. So we're going to give another explanation a little bit later, but that's at least the simple pshat, at least it covers it, at least why Yitzchak could possibly be impressed. Okay. Let's leave that now. Okay, we have the story of Avraham Avinu dies and Yaakov sells the birthright to Esau. Let's skip a little bit. We're going to come back to this when we develop a whole theme. Let's go to page 132. We'll just read a few of those psukim. The dramatic story of the brachas, of the blessings. Right? Page 132 at the bottom. Last word. Okay, Vayihi, right? Parak of Zayin, chapter 27. Says the Chumash. Vayihi ki zoken Yitzchak. And it happened to be when Yitzchak became old, vatichena einov meirois, and his eyes became dim from the ability to see, which the commentaries tell us was there was two reasons for that. One reason was by the Yakeda. It says as he was on the Mizbech, the Malachim cried and the tears went into Yitzchak's eyes. Or another pshat is that the smoke of pagan worship that Esau's wives engaged in, it says before that Yitzchak found it very, very irritable, and even physically, it actually harmed his eyes. Anyway, he couldn't see so well. Vayikras Esau b'noi ha-gadol, he called Esau his older son. Vayomer Elov, and he said to him, B'ni, my son. Vayomer Elov, hineini. He says, I'm here. Says, Vayomer, and he says, Hinei no zokanti, I'm now old. Lo yadati yo emosi, I don't know the day of my death. Viato, and now he says, Sono keilecho, sharpen your gear. Tel yecho v'kashtecho, your sword, your bow. V'tzei ha-soda, go out into the field. V'tzudo li tzayid, and hunt for me an animal. V'asei li mat'amim kasher ahavti, make for me dishes that I like. V'havio li v'oichelo, bring it to me and I will eat. Ba'avur tevarechecho nafshi b'terem omas, I shall able to, my soul shall be able to bless you before I die. Okay? This wasn't just a regular bracha, you know, when a tzaddik gives a bracha, it's a whole different story. You know, we wish each other well, you know, we call our people before yontif and wish them well, that's good, but this we're talking about a whole different level of brachas, right? We're talking about Yitzchak had in him a certain power of bracha that he was going to pass on, which he had decided to pass on to Esav. He needed the Shechina to rest upon him, which is why he asked for food. Because we find by Nevi'im, by prophets, sometimes they had to be in good spirits before the Shechina, before the Divine Presence could rest upon him. So that's the simple pshat. He asked him to please bring him that food. Told him to shecht it. He told him to shecht it properly, to bring him and to pray for him, in order that he should the Shechina should rest upon him, and he should be able to give Yitzchak Esav of the Brach. Continues the pasuk. Rivka shemas and Rivka heard this. B'daber Yitzchak al Esav b'noi. Vayelech Esav asad and Esav went into the field. Latzut tzayid lahavi to bring this hunted food for Esav for Yitzchak. Rivka omra Yaakov b'nos. Rivka says to Yaakov her son Leimar. Hinei shemati shavicha madaber al Esav v'chicha Leimar. I heard your father Yitzchak talking to your brother Esav, and he was saying to him, Havi oli tzayi vaseli matamim. Bring me hunted food and make me nice delicacies, va'achela, and I will eat, va'verecho lifnei Hashem, and I will bless you in front of Hashem lifnei Moisi. So she says to Yaakov, no, that's not going to happen. Va'ato b'ni shma b'koli. Now my son, listen to my voice. La'ashani mitzavoisa, what I'm commanding you to do. She had to command you to do it. Obviously, Yaakov was very afraid to do this, but she commanded Yaakov to do it. Lechna la'atzoin, go to the sheep. V'kachli misham, bring me there. Shnei gedoy izim toivim, two good goats. V'esa oisa matam la'vicha kashroev, and I will make that food for your father like he loves. We'll beat Esav to it, in other words. You'll bring it to your father and you'll eat. And he will eat. Ba'avur asher yivarecho lifnei Moisi, Moisi, in order that he should bless you before he dies. And he does that, as we know. The two goats, by the way, some people say it was Pesach. One was the Korban Pesach, someone was the Korban Chagiga. There's all kinds of different things that are happening here. He dresses up in the clothes of Esav. He comes to Yitzchak. Yitzchak is confused, but he blesses him. He goes out, and just in a split second, he goes out. Esav comes in. He introduces himself. He brings the food. It says, "Vayecharad Yitzchak harada gadol." Yitzchak trembled. The Farshim say he didn't just tremble because he got tricked. He trembled because actually he was able to see suddenly what Esav was about, and he saw the opening of Gehinnom. It says in front of Esav, and he realized that he blessed the right person. And he said, "Gam baruch hiyeh, he blessed Yaakov." And then the story unfolds from there. And then Esav is going to hate Yaakov. He's going to kill him. And Rivka and Yitzchak decide to send Yaakov away, which is next week's parasha. Okay.
Good incident, because
What's stila brachas?
The vision and even sound. I mean, it's really a...
Well, what's the question? How could she steal?
No, how could she actually be so, or make it be so deceptive? Looking further down.
It just
still doesn't
matter. She gets the message when she's pregnant. She knows that it's the blessing should go beyond.
Yeah, but I suppose the man is asking really. Bottom line is, he was. It's a famous question.
Before about the vision.
It's a famous question.
It's
a famous question. How is Yaakov allowed to do that? True. But it was obvious that she saw that the brachas need to go to Yaakov. This was a prophecy. Which she knew that the destiny of Am Yisrael hangs on this thing. There's a separate question, there's a philosophical question: why did the brachas need to come in a way of deceit? Why did Hashem orchestrate that? So there's a very simple answer to that. We find that all tremendously high things come that way. Do you know that? Similar to the neshama of Mashiach. If you track throughout Tanakh, the neshama of Mashiach, it's a very dodgy neshama. Do you know that? Right? Who's the ancestors of Mashiach? Yehuda and Tamar. Lot and his daughters, number one. Yehuda and Tamar. Rus and Boaz. All very shady stories. Right? Apparently shady stories, right? Dovin and Bathsheba. Right? Every story that evolves the ancestry of Mashiach is like that. Because sometimes that's the way it has to happen, and there's all reason for that, but sometimes the way it has to happen that certain great lofty things cannot come into the world straight. They have to be like stolen in, kind of thing.
It's
a whole idea of darkness and light, because part of the energy of the light is to transform the darkness and light, and therefore it has to come into the lowest form of existence. There's many, many different explanations for it. But the underlying question here is, why did Yitzchak want to give Esau the brachas, right? Yitzchak was a tzaddik too, don't forget. All right, Esau, we explained that Esau was very clever, he impressed his father, great questions. How do you take Maaseh from salt? All very nice. But he couldn't see through him. Come on, like, he was so blinded, he couldn't see through. We're going to leave that, and let's go back to the beginning of the parasha. I said to you before, let's go on a bit of a journey, and I hope I can do justice to this, but we'll try. What's that? Yeah, because it's a little bit of a theme which I developed for different things, and I'm probably able to put together properly. There's a famous question at the beginning of the parasha. Let's go back to the very, very first pasuk. The Eile told us Yitzchak ben Avram. We said this is the children of Yitzchak, the son of Avram. Avram hoilid es Yitzchak. Avram gave birth to Yitzchak, right? Page 124. So, there's a famous question. Rashi brings it. Many Mepharshim bring it. Why this double expression? What do you mean? These are the sons of Yitzchak, the son of Avram. Avram gave birth to Yitzchak. Right? What's the double expression? And there are a number of answers given for this question. But if you think about it, all these answers have to do with one thing. And that's what I want to just spend a few minutes first of all explaining, and then we're going to try and take that theme and apply it throughout the whole parasha. It's got to do with the two primary forces that Hashem used to create the world, and afterwards become the two primary drivers that drive our existence, which we've spoken about many, many times, both on Tuesday morning and on Thursday morning. And that's the two forces of Chesed and Gevurah, right? The right and the left. We find that when Hashem created the world, it says that He created the world originally with din, with justice, but then He saw the world would not survive only on justice, so He combined rachamim, He combined mercy, right? Similar idea, justice and mercy. Tzedek u'mishpat, chesed ve'emes, as we call it. Right? We find at the very beginning of creation that Hashem creates the world only with the name Elohim, right? Elohim is known as the name, a name of Hashem that represents gevurah, strength, justice, din, discipline, concealment. Later on, we find that Hashem brings into the world, into the psukim, the name of Hashem. It says later, Hashem Elohim, right? Because the name of Yudkei Vavkei is the name of Chesed, the name of revelation. So these two forces of Chesed and gevurah. What are these two forces? These two forces are two essential drives, essential patterns They represent a whole range of different things, but they all categorize into these two things, right? Chesed is the middah, is the attribute of flex, of outgoing, of revelation, light, connection, love, flexibility. You see how they all fit into one thing? Creation, newness, right? Chesed essentially is moving away from where I am to something else. That's why chesed represents love. That's why chesed represents the power to give, even though I don't want to, or even though you don't deserve it. The power of being flexible, the power of not being in a box, the power of connection between two people, going out of oneself. Right? The power of mercy is rooted in chesed. To be able to make peace. Right? That I'm not locked in my box. I can power to reveal, to open up a secret. It's all got to do with this power of chesed. Okay? The other drive, the other middah, the other attribute is the attribute of gevura. Gevura is the opposite. It's the power to withhold. Restraint. Remaining where I am, not moving out. Therefore, many things, good and bad, come from gevura. Discipline comes from gevura. Discipline means I stay with the program. I need to do this task now. I don't get distracted by something else. I'm with it. I'm organized. I put things into boxes. But judgment, harshness, also comes from gevura. Aggression comes from gevura because I reject. It's about rejection. About someone interfering with my, I don't have that flexibility. Someone interfering with my context, I reject it. Someone breaks the rules, they suffer. The power to conceal, the power to restrain, the power to hold back. Right? We find there's a pasuk that says that Hashem created the world. It says tzedek u'mishpat mechoyin kisecha. Tzedek, justice and rules, are the throne of your, the location of your throne. Chesed ve'emes yikadmu fanecha. Chesed and emes come before you. Right? In other words, there's a combination. Hashem created the world as the idea of emes and chesed. And you need both to create a world, because without chesed, we'd never survive. Hashem just judged us on the rules, we'd never survive. So there's the concept in the world called mishpat, where there are rules, there are consequences, right? Judgment. Things have to be with what they're supposed to be. Then there's the idea of chesed, of kindness. Right? So Hashem has to have kindness. If there was only chesed, the world wouldn't exist either. The anarchy. Okay, so there's within the fabric of creation, there's the two things of chesed and emes, or chesed and gevura, same thing. Emes comes from gevura, sort of. When we serve Hashem, also there's these two sort of things. The idea in the Torah, there's a mitzvah to love Hashem and to fear Hashem. Both are important. Love Hashem means the desire to connect to Hashem, to become close to Hashem. When you have the desire to come close to Hashem, Ava, love of Hashem, that normally motivates a person to do more mitzvahs, right? Because I love Hashem, I want to be connected to Hashem, I realize that coming close to Hashem is through the mitzvahs, so therefore I'm motivated to give life, enthusiasm, and vibrance to the mitzvahs that I do. On the other hand, we find the idea of Yiras Hashem, to fear Hashem. Why do we need to fear Hashem? Why isn't love of Hashem enough? Because love of Hashem is beautiful, but the problem is you only have love, you don't end up doing anything. Because love is, I'm coming close, I'm getting close to Hashem. You get close to Hashem, you become his buddy. Right? You become friendly with Hashem, so he's fine, he'll forgive me if I don't do the mitzvahs. So you have to have that tenua, that sort of approach also of Yiras Hashem. Yiras Hashem means, whoa, I hold back. Right? You see fear, fear is awe. It's a consequence of gevurah. It's not an attraction type attribute. It's a hold back. I'm embarrassed of him. I'm scared of him. I'm not going to do things he doesn't want me to do because he frightens me to a certain. Not the word, obviously, the goal is not to be frightened. The idea is, I take him seriously and I am in awe of him. I respect him. Right? Respect is sort of a middle of gevurah. Now, this chesed and gevurah idea, which Hashem created the world as well, is also the very, very basis of creation. Because the basis of creation is this. The basis of creation, and I once spoke about this at length on Thursday when we spoke about male and female, which we're going to get to in a second. The basis of creation is a combination between gilui and helem, which means revelation and concealment. Right? Which means as follows. Hashem created a world initially through the name of Elohim, which in Kabbalah we know is the name of Tzimtzum, the name of concealment, the ability for Hashem to hide himself. Right? So he creates a world where he is not obvious. Correct? That's one of the abilities of Hashem, that he could create a world that even though it's part of him, but he's not obvious there, it's dark. So he creates a world which is a world of concealment. That's Gevurah. That's the idea, he holds himself back. But the purpose of creation is to find the light in that Gevurah. The purpose of creation is to find the revelation of Hashem in that Gevurah. So therefore Hashem allows himself to be somewhat revealed. You follow? That's the candle in the darkness that we spoke about last week on Thursday. So he allows himself to be a little bit revealed, so we should understand what revelation of Hashem means, and therefore we should work to reveal Hashem in the concealment of this existence. Are you following me so far? More with me? Okay. So therefore in the fabric of creation you have these two ideas of Elohim and Hashem, Gevurah and Chesed, concealment and revelation. Now, these two forces are also the forces of the feminine and masculine. Okay. Because we know that when Hashem created the world, the two forces that are the foundation of existence is also a male force and a female force. Which Hashem then really it's one force, but Hashem separated it. Which is why it says in the beginning of Bereishit, Hashem originally created male and female together and then separated. Right? What is masculine energy and feminine energy? Masculine energy is this. The masculine energy is the energy of chesed, the feminine energy is the energy of gevurah. Not gevurah in a negative sense, by the way. Okay? Huh? Why is that? So let's understand just very briefly, we've talked about this another time at great length, but let's understand briefly the difference between male and female, the male energy and the female energy. By the way, when we say male energy and female energy, it not necessarily means man and woman. Okay, because we're going to see that. First of all, everyone is supposed to have both male and female. And it follows normally that men are dominated by the male energy and women by the female energy, but you have the opposite also. You have women that are very masculine and vice versa, right? So what is the male energy and the female energy in its purity, in its essence? The male energy, as we see even how this plays out in the physical manifestation of how things work, the male energy is an energy of creation, conception, newness. Right? That's why men very often are full of brilliant ideas and can never follow them through.
Sorry.
No. That's true.
Thinking of particular.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true.
Can you say that first part again?
So that's why it makes.
What's that?
You said it's that newness.
Newness. It's about conception, newness, always constantly going to the next thing. It's chesed and it's purity, it's pure sense. See, what you need to do to understand this concept properly, the problem is with us, we always talk about chesed and gevurah in its manifestation, as it's translated as kindness and severity. No, but that's not what we mean. It's not kindness and it's not severity. The reason why chesed is translated as kindness and gevurah is severity is because kindness is one of the outcomes of chesed, and severity is one of the outcomes of gevurah. But now we're talking about chesed and gevurah in their
raw state.
Okay? In their raw essential state, what they are. Okay, the energy of chesed, as it were. I'll give you an example of what I mean. You know that chesed brings in the Torah, when someone commits adultery, it's called chesed. Did you know that? Yeah. Or incest. Incest is referred to in the Torah as chesed. Yeah, why? No, because I want to bring out that we must translate the word chesed.
Mm-hmm.
Because
you're spoiling my whole view of chesed.
No, because there's bad chesed, there's good chesed. No, don't worry. Kindness is an outcome of chesed, right? But for example, I'll just give you an example how things. Because I'll tell you why. Because a person who's an indulgent person and completely undisciplined and follows his lust, that's a chesed attribute, right? It happens to be, in his case, an egocentric chesed attitude. So he has no mercy on his wife, no mercy on the consequences of what's going to happen, how it's going to affect his children. He just does whatever he wants to do. So chesed means moving. Right, it's an element of chesed. Chesed means to move out, to move one thing to another, to be flexible. That happens to be a very egocentric flexibility. It's not a good flexibility. That's what's called chesed, right? Faithfulness in a marriage, for example, faithfulness is a gevura attribute, right? Chesed personalities don't make good husbands, you know that? Or spouses. Gevura people do. Because they might not care about the whole world, but they care about what's good to them. So sometimes people who are not interested in helping, sometimes the people who are interested in helping the entire universe and fixing the whole world are lousy spouses. Why? Because they've got time for absolutely everyone, including their wives, but their wives and husbands happen to only rank as a fraction of the rest of the world. They're always moving to everyone, right? Whereas you find, you know what I'm saying, so good and bad doesn't it's not an outcome of chesed and gevurah, it depends how it's used.
Mm.
Okay, so I'm talking about chesed and gevurah in its raw state.
It's
called chesed because it's a person who just has no control, is following his lust at the very, very degraded level. Right? That's what's a chesed thing. A gevurah person doesn't even commit incest, a gevurah person is disciplined. He's able to stay faithful to what he's supposed to be faithful to. He's able to contain that drive that he has and channel it to the person that he's supposed to channel it to. Right? I'm just giving you an example of where you see the chesed in the So the male energy is the energy of chesed, it's newness. That's why in a marriage and in the reproductive whole process, the man's contribution is the creation of newness. Thousands of potential of newness. Right? But a male energy is that once the male has created something new, if it's not sustained by the female and not nurtured by the female, it just dies. Because the male energy is a spark of revelation, which is a powerful revelation, but can very quickly disappear. It's newness. Because the male, as soon as the male has created something new, it moves on to something else that's new. And that's why it plays out the thing I said before about many, many ideas, but can't necessarily sustain it, right? The female energy is about not newness. It's about cultivating where you are. You see how that's a gevurah thing? It's about not moving to the next thing. It's about nurturing and developing and sustaining, cultivating the now, the present. Which is why birth takes place through the female on that level. Gestation takes place in the female. Because what the female is able to do is take the spark of newness and not move on to something new, but develop it, cultivate it, stay with it, not move on to something else, but stay within. Got me? Okay. Which is why I mentioned last week in last week's parsha that Avram and Sarah had different approaches. The difference between Avram and Sarah was Avram didn't want to expel Yishmael. Sarah did. Why? Because we find the difference in the Ovis and the Mois that the male is busy with the spiritual. The female is busy with the physical. What does that mean? It's because of the same reason. The male's focus in life is always to generate spirituality into the world. Because spirituality is revelation, it's new revelation. God is not so revealed in this world, so you bring in a revelation from something else, from somewhere else. You generate newness, you generate Kedusha. Which is why Avraham Avinu looks at Yishmael and just wants to see him in a spiritual context. Avraham Avinu doesn't relate to the physical world. The physical world is a world of gevura, it's a world of concealment. Avraham Avinu is a world of chesed. He needs to generate newness, he needs to generate revelation. So he sees Yishmol in the spiritual Yishmol, the potential. And therefore doesn't want to expel Yishmol. He says, he's fine. We'll fix it. Sarah, on the other hand, is the female. Sarah understands how this existence works. Because Sarah can relate to the physical world. Because the feminine energy is about cultivating the physical world and making it work and sustaining it and developing and cultivating it so it should become a place where Hashem can be revealed. But in order to do that, the female understands the practicalities of how that works and how it needs to be implemented and how it's going to play out and what has to come first and what has to come second, what is good, what is bad, how you separate between the two. And therefore she advocates the expulsion of Yishmael in order that it should work. Right? Now, here comes an amazing thing. Yitzchak, when we talk about Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Yitzchak is known as Gevura. Because the three Ovis, right, although we said Chesed Gevura is male and female, but also we said that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Avraham is Chesed, Yitzchak is Gevura. Okay? Which fits in to an amazing Orach Chaim HaKadosh that I found. Based on the Arizal and based on way out Kabbalistic things. I remember last time I did this, I blew your mind. But let's try to do it again. So apparently the following. If you look in, listen to this. Yitzchak only married after he was 37. In fact, according to the Rashi, his wife wasn't even born yet. Right? Following the Rashi that she was 3 years old, and 3 years old was much more mature in those days, whatever the case is. But according to the calculation of the Chumash, she was only born after the Akedah. Right? Why was Yitzchak's wife only born after the Akedah? So, the Orach Chaim says, to have a child, you need the male energy and the female energy, right? You need the creation, and then you need the cultivation. Yitzchak was not capable of having a child till after the Akedah. Why not? Because Yitzchak, according to the Orach Chaim, inherited a female soul. In Kabbalah, we have that there are feminine souls and masculine souls. Yitzchak inherited a female soul, very understandable, because Yitzchak was Gevura. So therefore, now, how did this all play out? Kabbalistically, we are taught that Sarah, Imenu, was the same neshama as Chava. Right? According to the Zohar, Sarah was the tikkun, was the rectification of Chava. Chava messed up with the tree, Sarah came to fix it. That's why Sarah went to Mitzrayim, and she came out of Mitzrayim pure. Chava was thrust into this world with the temptation of the fruit and messed up. Sarah then went down to Mitzrayim, she came up to Mitzrayim, and she survived. So she was the tikkun of Chava. She then passed on that neshama to Yitzchak. Now if you look at the beginning of our year, just quickly, as we're getting late, just quickly page 78. Huh? Yeah. So that's actually 79, right? Where the Malachim at the beginning of Ayera tell Avraham Avinu that he's going to have a son. They were talking to him, right? They're talking to him, and they say, "You should know like this." They ask, "Where's Sarah?" So he says, "She's in the tent." So the Malach says, "Pasuk Yud, Shoyv Oshav Elecha Keischai. I'm going to come back to you next year. Vina Vein leSarah Ishtecha, and there will be a son for Sarah, your wife." The Sarah Shema, Sarah's listening and she's behind the door. Sarah Chaim says, "What's going on here? They're talking to Avraham, not to Sarah. Right? He's going to have a son as much as Sarah's going to have a son. What do you mean? Like a tree should say, I'm going to be back next year and you and Sarah are blessed with a son." No, they're talking to Avraham, and they're saying, "Next year I'll be back. Vinei vein the Sarah Ishtecha. Sarah will have a wife." Says Sarah Chaim, "Because Vinei vein, the son that you'll have, Sarah Ishtecha, is going to take the neshama of Sarah, not of yours. Take the feminine soul." Okay? Vine vein, the Malach says, "I'm going to come back next year. Vine vein, there'll be a son, but the son will be Lesara Ishtecha. It'll take the neshama of Sara, your wife. You'll have a feminine soul. He's going to be Gvura, not Chesed."
And he tells him that.
Yeah, he tells Avraham that, right? Okay. And the Arizal says something. We're not time to go into now. Arizal says even later on in the parsha, it says, "Hashem pokad es Sara." Hashem remembered Sara. And it's interesting because by Rachel, when it says Hashem remembered Rachel, it says Zachar is Rachel. He remembered Rachel. There's two words in Hebrew for Pakad and Zachar, both mean remembering. And the Arizal says that Zachar is male, and Pakad is female. Right? So he says that normally when a woman has a son, so the correct term would be Zachar. Hashem remembered that woman, meaning Hashem remembered that woman, so she'd be able to give birth to a male. Right? With a male soul. But Sarah doesn't say that. It says Hashem Pakad es Sarah. Hashem remembered Sarah with a feminine term, because we remembered Sarah, she gave birth to a son and had a feminine soul. Okay? Now, says the Arachaim like this, that wait, how are we going to finish in 6 minutes? I'm going to have to work. Okay? Have to try. Yeah. So says the Arachaim like this, that happened until the Akedah. Why wasn't Rivka born until after the Akedah? Because it says by the Akedah, it says that it says in Kabbalah that for a moment Avraham Yitzchak actually died by the Akedah. Porcha Nishmasa, his neshama left his body, and then it came back. Avraham Yitzchak Shechtim by the Akedah, by the binding of Isaac, right? At that moment when he took the knife, it says that, well, literally out of fright, but not so much out of fright, spiritually speaking, the neshama actually left his body, and that neshama was replaced. Excuse me, right? Avraham Avinu at that point was able to replace the neshama, still a gevura neshama, but it was replaced with a more masculine soul. That Avraham Avinu then gave Yitzchak the ability to have a child in the masculine way. In other words, he would be the male partner of the child. And it's at that point that Rivka was born, because then it was able for Yitzchak to get married, and later got married, right? So, it's wild stuff, eh? So, and it says in Kabbalah, listen to this, that neshama that departed from Yitzchak went into the ram, went into the aisle. So that when Avraham Avinu shechted the aisle, shechted the ram, and brought the ram as a substitute for Yitzchak, it was actually fulfilling the mitzvah of the Akedah that he was offering up Yitzchak, because it was the ram which had the soul of Yitzchak, the original soul of Yitzchak.
Wow.
Right? So therefore, says the Arachaim like this. This is one of the answers why you have two... You look confused. Why you have... What's that?
I get it.
Okay. So this is why you have a double expression. Says the Arachaim like this. Ve'ele told us Yitzchak and Avraham. These are the children of Yitzchak, the son of Avraham. Right? You know why all of a sudden Yitzchak can have children? Because Avraham hoyu this Yitzchak. Because after the Akedah, we just learned about last week's parasha, Avraham gave birth to Yitzchak. Before we learned that he was vain l'sara ishtecha. He was a son of only Sarah, because he only had a feminine soul. But after the Akedah, Avraham hoyudes Yitzchak, Avraham gave birth to Yitzchak, meaning Avraham invested into Yitzchak a masculine soul, and therefore, now he can marry Rivka, and therefore the Eilat told us Yitzchak, now I can have children. Yitzchak and Avraham. Number one. Carrying on the same theme of Chesed and Gevurah, it also explains another pshat. Rashi says that why we have double expression, right? Because it says that Eilat told Yitzchak and Avraham, this is the children of Yitzchak, the son of Avraham. Avraham gave birth to Yitzchak. What does it mean? So Rashi brings the Gemara, a simple pshat, that everyone was scoffing, everyone was laughing. Ah, Sarah had a child, Avraham had a child, Avraham was told to have a child. Sarah became pregnant, okay, it must have been from Avimelech, because in the middle, don't forget there was a story with Avimelech, she landed up Avimelech, and suddenly Avraham doesn't have a child for 100 years, right? And mitamol, a year after they, with the story of Avimelech, all of a sudden Sarah has a child, right? Good. So that was the gossip of the generation. What did Hashem do? Hashem made Yitzchak look like he made a miracle. He made Yitzchak look like Avraham, right? When he was born, made him look like Yitzchak, look like Avraham. So everyone's able to say, look, this is the son of Avraham. So the question is it such a miracle that a son should look like his father? I mean, there's 50% chance that every child looks like his father, right? It's not a major genetic operation. This, I mean, it's just, you know, pretty. The statistics are pretty high that a son should look like his father. So what's the miracle? But the miracle is very simple. Because normally a son looks like his father because he also shares the personality with his father. But Yitzchak wasn't like that. Yitzchak was born totally opposite to his father. Avraham Avinu was total extreme chesed. Yitzchak was total extreme gevura. Right? So therefore, the personality of a person, the intrinsic spiritual genetics of a person actually has an impact on the way he looks. We know that people have this something called chokhmas ha'partzuf, that by looking at a person's face you can tell their personality if you know how to do that. So therefore, by nature, Yitzchak was Gevurah, and especially we just learned that he adopted Sarah's soul as opposed to Avraham Avinu's soul. He was a Gevurah Neshama. So he should not have looked like Avraham. That's why the fact that he did look like Avraham to dispel the myths of, and the gossip of the generation, that was a miracle. Hashem, what did Hashem do? He made Yitzchak look like Avraham against his personality, against his Gevurah. You understand? So that's why it explains, that was such a miracle. That's why it says, Ela tolos Yitzchak ben Avraham. Avraham hoilidus Yitzchak. Avraham gave birth to Yitzchak. Okay. And finally, this whole concept of Yitzchak being the neshama of Gevurah gives us a whole insight into the whole story of the Brachas. Because the Mefarshim explained, I'll just do this briefly, Yitzchak was very well aware of where Esav was after. But the problem is this. Yitzchak was Gevurah. Right? Even after the Akedah, he remained Gevurah. He stood for Gevurah. Okay, he had a bit of a masculine soul, but he still remained Gevurah. The problem was, because he was Gevurah, he was misguided Gevurah. See, he was still like a man's Gevurah. Right? He still needed Rivka. Why? Because when Hashem created the world, we said there's chesed and there's gevurah. There's revelation and there's concealment. There's light and there's darkness. What is the purpose of creation? The light or the dark? So really, the purpose of creation is the darkness. In other words, what do I mean by that? It's to reveal that the darkness is no less a manifestation of Hashem than what light is, right? Because I've given you this whole idea before, that Hashem is not limited to light or the dark, he can manifest himself in either, right? He can be limited, unlimited, etc., without going into the whole thing now. If Hashem didn't want to create darkness, he didn't need to create this world altogether. There was plenty of spiritual worlds, angels, and all kinds of good things. The purpose of Hashem creating this world is because to reveal, to discover God in the darkness, to discover God in the concealment, to show that even where Hashem is not obvious, He is there. He's revealed there. It's part of His reality. There's nothing outside the reality of God. And that's a very Gevurah idea. Because it's about the concealment, being God also. So Yitzchak comes to Esav now and he says, listen, I know what Esav is about. Esav is about darkness. Yitzchak wasn't a fool. Yaakov is about light. Yaakov is the candle. Yaakov is chesed. Well, he wasn't chesed, he was teferis actually, but Yaakov is the concept of revelation. So if I have to invest the bracha into something, let me invest the bracha into where it's needed. Let me invest the bracha into the darkness so that we can discover Hashem, so that Gevurah can have its realization. Gevurah can be elevated to where it needs to be. Right? And that's why he wanted to invest the bracha into Esav. But here's where you still need the woman, you see. Because at the end of the day, he was Gevurah, but he was still a male. So the idea was great, but it wasn't going to be applied successfully. It wouldn't work that way. Rivka understood how that concept will actually play out. She understood the detail. Right? That's a real feminine thing. She could break it down into all of its details to follow it through till the end. And Yitzchak realizes that the formula cannot work like that. Yitzchak realizes that Rivka realizes that it's true that the purpose is to illuminate the darkness, but you need the power of the candle to illuminate the darkness. If you get stuck in the darkness, all you're going to remain with is darkness. You're not going to see Hashem there. In order to discover God in the darkness, you need to import chesed. You need to import the candle, the light of the chesed. You need to combine the marriage of chesed and gevurah. You need to bring in the light of chesed in order to find God even where it's hidden. In order to find the light even in the gevurah. So she says, yes, of course it's all about Esau. It's also about the world, about illuminating the darkness of the world. But it's got to only be led, it's got to be guided. The leader of that project, the guidance of that project must all come through Yaakov. And therefore the brachas need to be invested in Yaakov in order for that to work. And that's exactly how it works today. Our Our function is not only us, our function is to illuminate the world. We're called Or Lagoyim, a light unto the nations. It's not just a nice phrase, it's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to reveal God in the entire universe, but we have to lead the process. It's got to come through Yaakov. And that's why she, who's the ultimate feminine, in other words, she really understands how it's going to actually play out. Yitzchak was Gevura, and therefore he wanted Esav. Rivka was also Gevura. He says, of course, I know it's got to be through Esav. Because that's the whole Gevura concept, concealment. Revealing Hashem within. But it's got to work a certain way. To be applied practically, it's got to go through Yaakov. And that's why she invests the brachas into Yaakov. So it's the Chesed Gevura theme that's coming through.
Okay.